David did not have to look far to spot Uriah's wife taking a bath. It turns out that David's wanting to know the woman's name was far from innocent. He was not deterred in the least by knowing this beautiful woman was someone's wife. The Bible is full of stories that we all know and love. But how well do we know them? The answer might surprise you. The Bible you thought you knew is going to dive deep into the exquisite details of the biblical stories that make them fascinating and transforming. In a previous podcast, I treated the famous incident where David confronts and defeats the Philistine, otherwise known as Goliath. That was in 1 Samuel 17. This week, I will focus on arguably the most infamous story in which David is protagonist, his affair with Bathsheba. That is in 2 Samuel chapter 11. If David's reputation soars in the former incident, it sinks to the depths in the latter. Indeed, it is difficult to believe the same man is involved in both episodes. In one, no praise seems too lavish. In the other, no condemnation seems sufficient. As the chapter begins, the narrator immediately signals something is not quite right. The time of year is mentioned, spring, but we are not reminded of that as though it was a biblical weather report. Instead, we are informed that spring is when kings go out to wage war. As unpleasant a task as that might be, it is one of the regular duties of a king, David included. In this instance, the Ammonites are the foe. To deal with them, David sends his general, Joab, and all Israel, which is not hyperbolic, but an indication that Israel as a people is caught up in this serious business. So far, so good. David is deploying troops. That is what kings do. But the next statement makes us realize that something is amiss. David stayed in Jerusalem. David was king and commander-in-chief. David had a long, impressive career as a brilliant warrior. He had marched with his army on many campaigns. Why did he stay in Jerusalem this time? We are not told. But there is a subtle criticism on the narrator's part by pointing out that David stayed in Jerusalem precisely when kings, as a rule, go forth to war. In fact, a later scribe attempted to soften the criticism by inserting a single letter in the Hebrew word for kings, making the word read instead, messengers. That makes no sense in this context. Joab was hardly a messenger, he was a general. A final editor put a mark on the letter to ensure the word would be read as kings, not messengers. David stayed at home when, by all accounts, he should have been with his troops. Then we learn that one evening, early or late in the evening is not specified, David got up from his bed and walked out on the palace roof, evidently a veranda of some sort. Had David taken an early nap and decided to get a breath of fresh air? Had he gone to bed for the night, but awakened for some reason and was dealing with insomnia? We can only speculate. However, whatever the reason for this nighttime stroll, his eyes turned downward, leading him to notice a woman bathing. Upon learning this, the time is easier to fix. It had probably been either early in the evening or even late afternoon to afford enough light for David to see this woman. Even if there was a lamp or torch that lit up the bath area, there almost surely had to be enough natural light to facilitate David's eyesight. David was intrigued, so he inquired about the woman. The narrator lets us know that she was beautiful. There is no indication that she was doing anything but bathing. In this instance, David was a subject who was looking, the woman was an object that was being watched. It did not take long for David to be told the woman's name. Is this not Bathsheba, Eliam's daughter, and Uriah the Hittite's wife? Even though this sounds like a question, it is excellent Hebrew grammar. This is the same as saying, this is Bathsheba, Eliam's daughter, and Uriah the Hittite's wife. But this is no simple introduction. While we do not know much about her father, we know something about her husband. In a verse or so, we will realize that he was a soldier in the Israelite army. Later, we discover that Uriah was a member of an elite force in David's army, and perhaps a unit under David's special command. His prominence and status are even indicated by the fact that his house was right next to David's own palace. David did not have to look far to spot Uriah's wife taking a bath. It turns out that David's wanting to know the woman's name was far from innocent. He was not deterred in the least by knowing this beautiful woman was someone's wife. So he sent messengers, took her, whereupon she came to him and he slept with her. As we contemplate these details, we also find out why she was bathing. She had been in the process of purification after her menstrual period. From modern sensibilities, this seems to come under the category of too much information. But it has a point in the story. The fact that she was just coming off her period will let us know that if conception results from her sleeping with David, there will be no doubt that David was the father. Indeed, the very next thing we find out is Bathsheba did get pregnant from this encounter. Immediately, she let David know, I am with child. David now has a dilemma, because, as it turns out, Uriah is with his military comrades and not home. This means the neighbors will wonder how Bathsheba got pregnant while her husband was out of town. It will not be long before the gossipers have a field day. David needs to spring into action before Bathsheba looks obviously pregnant. That means the king needs to figure out how to get Uriah back home. If the husband sleeps with Bathsheba, no one will be the wiser when she has a baby, even if she gives birth prior to the customary gestation period. After all, there is such a thing as premature birth. So, to prevent embarrassment, David sends for Uriah. Joab, his general, has Uriah report to David. The king saw no reason to tell Joab why he wanted Uriah back in Jerusalem, and the general did not bother to ask any questions. The next thing you know, Uriah is in Jerusalem at the palace. First, David engages the soldier with a little small talk. How was the general doing? Are the troops okay? Is the war coming along? Before Uriah gets a chance to respond, David surprises the soldier with an offer he surely would find hard to resist. Go home and wash your feet. That is a shorthand and ultimately euphemistic way of David encouraging Uriah to go home, enjoy some home cooking, and spend some time with your wife. David made it sound so pleasant, enticing, and natural. What a great king to offer a weekend furlough to a war-weary soldier. Then, to sweeten the deal, David offered Uriah a present as he left the palace. We are not told what it was, but presumably a present from the king would have been very nice. Unfortunately for David, Uriah did not do as the king had suggested. Instead, he slept by the door of the palace with the other servants. He did not go home. We must wait to find out why Uriah did this, but it did not take long to know. Once David is told what happened, he summons Uriah and puts the question to him. Have you not come from a journey? Why did you not go to your house? In effect, David is saying, man, you have been working hard. The work is dangerous. It took a while for you to get here. Why not take advantage of my gesture? Go home, relax, take a little break. But Uriah has a ready answer. Though the offer is attractive, Uriah has other priorities. The soldier explains that Israel and Judah, remember all Israel had gone to battle, not to mention the sacred ark, are camping in the field in lean-tos and sleeping in the field. How could I allow myself to eat and drink, sleep in a soft bed, and lie with my wife? Here the same verb is used to describe David's having had sex with Bathsheba. That violates Uriah's code, his integrity, and his solidarity with his fellow soldiers. Thank you, King David, but no thanks. I could not look myself in the mirror were I to take you up on your offer. David's dilemma is now worse than he imagined. What is plan B? This time he tells Uriah to wait a couple of days before he returns to the troops. The soldier complies. It ends up that plan B involves wine from the royal cellars. David plies Uriah with enough wine to make him drunk. Surely in this inebriated state, Uriah will stagger home. That is all David needs. Even if Uriah is too drunk to have sex with his wife, his being home will provide all the cover that David and Bathsheba need. But plan B also failed. Uriah found a couch in the palace where the servants congregate and spent the night there, sleeping it off, so to speak. The ploy to get the man's souse did not work. Uriah was determined not to go home. Uriah had more integrity while drunk than David had while sober. Now, David is desperate. He believes his only option is to get rid of Uriah once and for all. So he writes a letter to Joab, which he has Uriah deliver. In this note, David instructs Joab to make sure Uriah is placed at the very front of attacking troops. As though that was not dangerous enough, David nefariously instructs Joab to withdraw any forces who were providing covering fire. This will almost certainly be fatal for Uriah, David reasons. David's planning for Uriah's death in this manner is cold-blooded murder and heartlessly includes the deaths of others fighting with him. As diabolical as David's intentions were, something else is equally revealing. Uriah had so much integrity that David did not worry in the least that the soldier would look at the letter he was delivering to his commanding officer. Had he read it, Uriah would have realized that he was carrying his death warrant. Joab followed David's orders to the T. He assigned Uriah to a group who had to take on an elite enemy force. The necessary backup mysteriously did not show. The Israelite soldiers took losses, among whom was David's primary target, Uriah the Hittite. David had solved his problem. Uriah was dead. Nothing now stood in the path between David and Bathsheba. Joab then sent word back to David. Knowing David and the king's understanding of military strategy, Joab told the messenger how to couch the news. He reminded the messenger to tell the king not only of the losses that the Israelite army had sustained, but also how to deal with the king's certain anger. It was completely amateurish to attack a wall without covering fire from archers. David, of course, knew that. David wanted the messenger to explain why he had made such a bonehead error. When David lost his temper and accused his general of gross incompetence, the messenger was to inform the king at that point that Uriah the Hittite had died during the attack. David reacted just as Joab anticipated. The king blew his stack when he heard that the Israelites charged a wall without archers covering them. David even cited a famous incident from the past, which illustrated how vulnerable soldiers under a wall were. The messenger very carefully explained what had happened. First, the enemy got an initial advantage over Israel's forces. Then the Israelites drove them back into the city. Unfortunately, at that point, the archers the enemy had stationed on the wall had clear shots on our invading forces. That is why we took such heavy losses, including Uriah the Hittite. When David heard that Uriah had lost his life in this skirmish, he immediately became philosophical. He told the messenger to return to Joab and tell him not to worry about this reversal. After all, David offered, war is hell. The sword kills randomly. You win some, you lose some. That is just the way war is. Encourage Joab to regroup, reinforce, attack the city again. It was too bad that Israelite soldiers died in an ill-conceived battle designed to take out a single soldier, but that was a cost David was willing to pay to make sure Uriah was out of the way permanently. He had succeeded with his wicked plot. The other soldiers were simply collateral damage. When Bathsheba heard about her husband's death, she went into mourning. How long, we are not told. But when the appropriate time had elapsed, David sent for Bathsheba and brought her to the palace to become his wife. David is still the subject of the verbs. Bathsheba is still the object. Then she gets her first verb. She bore David a son. David had pulled off what amounted to a hit without a hitch. Only Joab had any knowledge. No one else knew a thing. All that Bathsheba knew was that she was pregnant by David. She did not know that David had plotted to kill Uriah. She and everyone else would assume that Uriah died violently as an Israelite soldier. Consequently, Bathsheba lamented her husband's death. Afterwards, David brought this widow into the palace to become his wife. Only those closest to Uriah and Bathsheba would be suspicious about the birth of a baby in less than 9 months. How long had she been pregnant when she informed David? There's no way to know. There may have been a few wagging tongues when the baby was born, but David and Bathsheba could deal with that. Before long, people would think of Bathsheba as David's wife, and Uriah would be on the way to be completely forgotten. That would take care of the human actors in this saga. But the story had another actor. For the first time in the whole chapter, God is mentioned. The statement could not have been more straightforward. The thing David did was evil in the eyes of the Lord. David had pulled the wool over the eyes of virtually everyone else. That did not, however, work with God. God saw this as evil, plainly and simply. Evil is a strong word. In this case, it seems apt. What David did was deliberate, calculating, premeditating, and utterly callous. He could easily have let the matter drop after seeing Bathsheba bathing. He took the next step and inquired about her. Perhaps he thought she was unmarried, which would have meant she was potentially available to him. In that society, monogamy was not the norm, especially for royalty. David could have added to the royal harem with no problem. But once he found out she was married, that should have ended the matter. Instead, he had her brought into the palace and slept with her. Presumably, that was all he had in mind until she got pregnant and told him. That was when things spun out of control. First, he lied and tried to induce Uriah to go home. When that did not work, he brought in Joab as an accessory to murder by ordering him to arrange for an attack that was almost certainly going to be fatal for Uriah. Even worse, this plot involved other Israelite soldiers. Showing no remorse whatsoever, he took the widow as his wife after she had grieved her husband's death for a suitable period. Not once are we told that David loved Bathsheba, or vice versa. Uriah and other Israelite soldiers had to pay the ultimate price so that David could hide his affair from the populace. No wonder this was evil in the Lord's eyes. What happens next in this continuing story will be the subject of next week's podcast. I want to thank you so very much for listening to The Bible You Thought You Knew. I have a question for you. Do you have a question or topic that you'd like me to cover on the podcast? If so, all you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do two simple things. One, leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. Two, in that review, ask anything you want related to the Bible. That's all you have to do. Then, listen in to hear your question answered on a future episode. Join us next time on The Bible You Thought You Knew, when we discuss Jesus' personal Bible. God bless.